I wasn't paying much attention as I rounded the corner, still loose and easy and smelling of healthy effort. I'd kept my house and bought the two houses on either side with some of the blood money from the Santino bounty. Knocking the two houses down and building a wall around my place was the best step I ever took for privacy. I'd gotten the idea from Gabe. She inherited her private walls. I had to build my own. My left shoulder burned with steady hot pain.
I wonder if this mark will eventually just start to eat my skin.
The last of my good mood fled.
Lucifer, maybe? What are the chances that he's involved in this mess? No, there was no smell of demon on Christabel. I'm fairly sure I'd smell that. And this is too much gore for a demon. Not even Santino was this messy.
Thinking about the Prince of Hell made a slight rippling chill go up my back. It was fairly obvious he was still keeping an eye on me. For what purpose, I didn't like to guess.
Screw Lucifer. He can wait until I found out who's killing Scions.
Clicks alerted me. I didn't stop, but my shields thinned, and I felt the hungry mood circling my front gate. The defenses on my walls sparked and glittered. The curtain of power would cut out any holovid receiver that got too close. Oh, damn. Reporters. They hadn't noticed me yet. The clicks I'd heard were someone tucked behind a street lamp, taking stills of my walls. His back was to me, sloping under a tan trench coat, uncoordinated dark hair standing up. Purple dusk was falling, and bright lights began to switch on. He was a normal, and therefore blind to the eddies and swirls I caused in the landscape of power. I stood aside in shadow, melding with a neighbor's laurel hedge, and watched them for a few minutes.
Holovids, what the hell do they want with me? Oh, yeah. Sekhmet Sayes, who tipped them off? Less than 24 hours on the case and there's already a leak. Wonderful. Perfect. Great.
My knuckles whitened against the sword hilt. The sword was a slightly heavier katana. A beautiful, curving, deadly blade in its reinforced black lacquered scabbard, older than the parapsychic act. I had expected it to feel strange to hold a sword again. I expected my right hand to cramp and seize up. It didn't. In fact, it felt more natural than ever to curl my fingers around the hilt. Natural and painless. I could pull the blade free of the sheath in one motion.
It's not my sword yet.
My fingers eased up a little. It would take time and power before the blade would respond like my old sword had, made into a psychic weapon as much as a physical one. A lance of exquisite pain through my fingers made my hand spasm around the hilt. I watched the holovid reporters circle in front of my gate, their Klieg lights blaring, trying to get a good shot of my house. No hovers. They must have gotten some aerial shots already.
Jace, has he managed to slip inside unseen?
I finally cut through someone's weedy front yard and down the dirt-packed alley that had marked my neighbor's property line before I'd bought the place. No reporters back here yet, thank the gods. My shields quivered, straining. I stopped, staring at my wall. The layers of energy I'd warded it with were flushing and pulsating a deep crimson. Demon-laid shields, necromance shields, layers that Jace had applied. Of spiky shaman darkness. I calmed the restive energy with a touch and felt Jace inside, his sudden attention stinging against my receptive mind. It was a bit of work to scale the wall. I'd contracted one of the best construction guys in the city to make it smooth concrete, aesthetic razor spikes standing up from the top. Demon quick reflexes saved me. I hauled myself up and over with little trouble. Landing in the back garden, water tinkled from a fountain, the smell of green growing things closing around me. The air pressure changed. Jace's silent greeting, one sigh to another. When I slid the back door open, stepping over a pile of flat slate tiles I planned on turning into divination rune plates, Jace met me with a cup of coffee and a grim expression. He hadn't started drinking yet, but the night was young. I didn't stare at him, only by an effort of will.
Hey, looks like we've got company.
Oh yeah, fucking vultures.
Mob freelancers hate reporters a little more than the rest of us, and Jace was no exception. There's a reason why size don't work for the Holovids. Well, besides the obvious fact that they would never hire a psionic actor or a talking head, it was illegal to discriminate. But the natural antipathy we felt for the way we were shown on the Holovids, mixed with the reluctance of the studio heads to put a scion on the air and lose a chunk of Lutter ratings, equaled no psionic actors. Status quo, just like usual.
Nice sword.
That was as close to a comment as Jace would allow himself. I shrugged.
Thought it was time I started practicing again. How'd you make out?
Pulled a few old strings, visited a few old friends. Got you the invite for tonight. You can take a servant with you, it says. Need me?
I actually considered it for a few moments, then looked at him. There were fine lines at the corners of his eyes. His mouth was pulled into a straight line, and he was bleary-eyed from too much shivas, too many bounties, and not enough sleep. His clothes were rumpled, and I saw a shadow of stubble along his jaw. It occurred to me that my friends were getting older. And I looked just the same, when I could bring myself to glance in the mirror. Golden skin and dark eyes and a demon's beauty. A gift I'd neither wanted nor asked for. I shook my head.
I need you to research for me, remember?
Even my hair shifted uneasily. The vision of Jace walking into the House of Pain was enough to make me shiver. I wasn't sanguine about going in there myself. Despite the fact that non-human paranormals had legal rights and voting blocks, they still didn't like to get too chummy with humans. I didn't blame them.
I need to know a couple of things, and you're just the man to find out.
He folded his arms, his tattoo thorn twisting on his unshaven cheek.
You are a spectacularly bad liar, once someone knows you.
What?
Now I was feeling defensive, and I hadn't gotten 10 feet inside my own back door yet. The papers lying on the closer end of my kitchen counter stirred uneasily.
I wonder if there's another parchment envelope in today's mail.
I pushed the thought away.
Jace, for the sake of every god that ever was, please don't ask to go to the House of Pain. I worry enough about you on regular bounties.
I closed my lips over the words, swallowed them. That was the surest way to piss him off, implying that he was less than capable. He planted his booted feet and regarded me with a cocky half-smile, meaning he was on the verge of irritation.
I won't break, Danny. I've seen worse than this, and I know how to take care of myself. Quit treating me like I'm second class, all right?
Jace, this is not the conversation I want to have with you right now, Jace. Why do you always pick the worst goddamn time to throw your little hissy fits?
Maybe I'm not a demon, but I used to be good enough for you, once. And I've kept up my end of the bounties, haven't I?
He did not just say that to me.
My stomach turned into a stone fist, heat rising to my cheeks. The window bowed slightly.
If I blow my own fucking house down, it'll even be more fodder for the vultures outside.
I pushed past him, gently enough not to hurt him, only sending him backward a few steps. My teeth buried in my lower lip, I stalked through the kitchen, down the hall, and up the stairs. Halfway up the stairs, Anubis's statue stood 9 inches tall, slim and black, glowing with power inside the altar niche. 2 unlit black novenas stood on either side. I had scattered rose petals and poured a shallow black bowl of wine for him. The wine's surface trembled as I stopped, looking into the niche. Set to one side, a black lacquer urn glowed. No dust lay against its slick, wet surface. No dust ever touched it, and no whisper of the ashes it held ever reached me. I'd spent hours staring at it. I knew every curve of the smooth surface. I had even once or twice caught myself opening my mouth to say something to the urn. I'd drawn chalk circles and tried solitary magi conjurings out of shadow journals, altering the runes and circles, trying to find my key to weaken the fabric of reality and call him to me. I tried to use my tarot cards and runes, but the answers I got were always fuzzy, slippery, fading. Nothingness, emptiness, dissolution. My own desperate hope managed to make any information I could get from divination useless. My shoulder burned, but my right hand,
clamped around the sword hilt, did not hurt.
Jaffer Mill.
I didn't say it. My lips shaped the word, that was all.
He isn't there, Danny. Stop torturing yourself.
But had he waited for me there before slipping into the abyss?
Don't think about that, Danny. Sekhmet Sias, he's gone. He's not in death. You've seen he's not there. Stop it.
I just couldn't help myself.
Who would ask the questions for me, even if I managed to make an apparition of my dead demon lover appear? Certainly not Jace. It's too much to ask even Gabe for, and she's the only necromancer who might conceivably do such a thing for me.
Fuck!
Is he listening? He can probably tell from any slight sound where I am in the house.
That is, if he didn't simply extend his senses and see me. He could tell I was in front of the niche. I'd caught him standing here once or twice, too, usually after I'd spent my days between bounties in the living room staring at the urn's smooth sides, reluctantly replacing it every time. When I wasn't feverishly researching demons, searching for any clue about the Fallen, that is. I didn't know what Jace would say to Jaframel's ashes. I didn't even want to guess.
He can certainly tell I'm standing here.
My fingers tightened.
Well, Anubis is my patron. I never asked Jace to come here.
You never sent him away, either.
There it was again. Jaframel's voice is my conscience. Not the level, robotic voice he'd used when I first met him, no. Instead, it was the almost human voice he'd used to whisper to me while I shuddered, wrapped in barbed wire pleasure and his arms. The fingers of my left hand hovered centimeters from the urn's surface.
What would I feel if I touched it now?
What would I feel? My senses raw from pulling Christabel Moorcock's screaming, insane ghost out of death. My body loose from sparring with Jado and sweating out the chill touch of that dry country where Anubis stood, endlessly waiting for me.
Oh, fuck.
I continued up the stairs.
It's useless to waste time. I have to get ready. If I'm going to the House of Pain, I want to be dressed appropriately. Oh, damn. I'm going to have to take the whip.
When I came back down, Jace was standing in the living room, his arms folded, the portable holovid player bathing the room in its spectral pink glow. He'd hit the mute button as soon as I'd appeared. I held the cloak over my arm, a long fall of sable velvet. I'd managed a tolerable French twist with my recalcitrant hair. The earrings brushed my cheeks as I tossed my head impatiently, making sure the long, thin stilettos holding the twist steady were not likely to fall out. It would be highly embarrassing to meet the prime paranormal power in the city and have weapons fall out of my hair. Jace's mouth opened as if he was going to say something. Instead, he stopped, his jaw dropping further open. His pupils dilated, making his eyes seem dark instead of blue.
What? Look, it's the House of Pain. I can't wear jeans and a t-shirt, much as I'd rather.
You would have before.
But his mouth quirked up in a smile. I felt my own mouth curl in response.
I'd have never gotten an invitation before. They don't let humans in, especially not Sais. Look, Jace...
Research! What do you want me to find?
He flicked the holovid off, bent down to touch his staff where it lay against the couch, then straightened, his back to me.
I'll bet you're thinking of someone instead of something, right?
I hate your habit of anticipating me, Jace. I always have.
I need you to find out everything you can about our normal.
I rotated my shoulders back and then forward, making sure the rig sat easy. Before, I'd always carried my sword. No use having a blade if it's not the hand, Jado often said. But I'd need my hands for other things tonight. My rig, supple, oiled black leather, complemented the black silk of the dress and the sword hilt poked up over my right shoulder. The back carry was buckled to my usual rig. Drawing a sword is quicker when the hilt is over one's shoulder instead of at the hip. And it keeps the scabbard from knocking into things, too. It was a compromise, like everything else. Chunky dress combat boots with silver buckles hid under the long skirt. I was unwilling to sacrifice any mobility to high heels. I'd already lose out because of the damn dress.
The necklace was silver-dipped raccoon baculum, strung on fine silver chain, twined with black ribbon and blood-marked bloodstones. Powerful shaman mojo. Jace had made the necklace for me during our first year together. He had poured his power into it, using his own blood in the workings over the bloodstones. His skill and his affection for me, as well as every defense a shaman knew how to weave. I had locked it away when he left, unable to burn it as I'd burned everything else that reminded me of him. But now it seemed silly to go into the lion's den without all the protection I could muster. My rings shifted and spat, shimmering in the depths of each stone.
He's our first victim. There has to be a reason it started with him.
You got it.
His eyes dropped below my chin. The dress had a low, square neckline with a laced-up slit going down almost to my belly button. My breasts offered like golden fruit, thanks to the shape and cut. The slender silver curves of the baculum were a contrast against velvety golden skin. The sleeves were long, daggering to points over the backs of my hands. The effect was like nocturnia on the paranormal news reports. A sort of elegant, old-fashioned campiness. The guns rode low on my hips. The knives hidden in both the dress and the rig. The bullwhip coiled and hanging by my side. I knew I'd be chafing by the end of the night. And probably missing my messenger bag, too.
Did Gabe courier the files?
Jace's eyes dropped again, appreciatively. And then he let it go, straightening and scooping up his staff. The bones cracked and rattled.
He's not quite as calm as he wants me to think.
For once, I let it go.
Dante Valentine, restraining herself. You deserve a medal. Of course, as careful as you're being, he is too. Give him a gold star. Give him a medal, too. Hell, give him a fucking parade.
I told that snide little voice in my head to shut the fuck up. He nodded.
Of course. Over there.
He tipped his head. I found them lying atop an untidy stack of ancient leather-bound demonology books. I would have to visit the library again soon, make an offering in the temple overhead, and go down into the dark vaults full of ancient books. Maybe this time I would find a demonology text that would give me a vital clue about what I was. I flipped the first file open, took a few pictures, the second, and then the third. Christabel's ruined face stared up from glossy lace print paper, but there was a good shot of the twisted chalk glyphs. I would probably have to visit her apartment, too. Sooner rather than later to catch whatever traces of scent remained. If nothing broke loose, that was.
I'm going to have to take the hover. Gods!
Why don't you take the slick board?
In this dress?
Relax, baby. I ordered a hover limo.
The grin he wore infected my own face. I felt the corners of my eyes crinkle and my lips tilt up. How could he go from irritating me to making me smile? Then again, he liked to think he knew me all the way down to my psychopomp.
No reason not to go in style.
He sounded so easy I could have ignored the spiky, twisting darkness of his aura. Jace was furious. His anger kept barely in check. I laid the cloak down, the pictures on top of it, and for the first time crossed the room to stand next to him. His blue eyes dropped. Jace Monroe looked at the floor. I swallowed dryly, then reached up and laid my fingertips against his cheek. My nails, black and shiny, wet-looking as the lacquer of Jaframel's urn, scraped slightly. The contact rilled through me. My aura enfolded him, the spice of demon magic swirling around us both.
Why must even an apology be a battle with you?
Jaframel's voice, again, stroking the deepest recesses of my mind. I had never thought it possible to be haunted by a demon. Of course, if he had truly been haunting me, it might have been a relief. At least I wouldn't be torturing myself with his voice.
If he was haunting me, at least I would have some proof that somewhere, somehow, he still existed and was thinking of me.
Jace, he shivered.
Be careful. Be very careful. You don't know what it will do to him.
The old voice of caution arose. Keeping him at arm's length was an old habit. I still ached to touch him, even as the thought made my stomach flutter.
with revulsion or desire, or some combination of the two, in what proportion, I wasn't sure. Oddly enough, I wanted to comfort him. He had suffered my silence and my throwing myself into bounties, playing my backup with consummate skill. He had turned into the honorable man I'd first thought he was.
When had that happened?
Danny.
Why do the words "I'm sorry" stick in my throat?
I want to know something.
Mm-hmm.
His fingers played with his staff, bones shifting slightly, but not clacking against each other. His skin was so fine, so dry. And once I looked closely, I could see the beautiful arch of his cheekbone, the fine fan of his eyelashes tipped with gold. Jaframel had studied me this intently once, as if I was a glyph he wanted to decode.
Lovely, Danny. You're touching Jace, and all you can think of is a dead demon.
Why did you give up the family? Jace's eyes flew open, dug into mine, oceans of blue. I smelled his power rising, twining with my own.
I don't need it, Danny. What good is a whole fucking family without you?
If he'd hit me in the solar plexus with a quarterstaff, I might have regained my breath more quickly. My skin flushed with heat.
You.
My fingers sank into his skin. His desire rose, wrapping around me. The threads of the tapestry hung on my west wall shifted, the sound brushing against sensitive air, and for once I did not look to see what Horus and Isis in their cloth-bound screen would tell me. He tore away from me, his staff smacking once against my floor, and stalked across the room to my fieldstone altar, set against the wall between the living room and the kitchen. He'd set up his own small altar next to it, lit with novenas, set out a half bottle of rum, a pre-parapsychic act painting of St. Barbara for his patron Chango, a dish of sticky caramel candy, and a brass bowl of dove's blood from his last devotional sacrifice. The candle flames trembled.
Even the Loa can't force a woman's heart. Here's your invitation.
A square of thick, white, expensive paper, produced like a card trick, held up so I could see it over his left shoulder.
Jace.
Better go. I hear the Prime doesn't like to be kept waiting. I had to pay to get this.
Jace!
I'll have any dirt on your normal by tomorrow afternoon, okay?
Jason!
Will you just go, Danny?
Irritation rasped under my breastbone. I stalked up to him, snatched the paper out of his hand. The proximity chime rang. The hover limo was here. Jace tapped his dat band, keying it in through the house's security net. I pulled the shields apart slightly to let the big metal thing maneuver into my front yard. I scooped up my cloak and the pictures and stamped out of the living room. If I hadn't been part demon, with all a demon's acuity, I would never have heard his murmur.
I had to give it up, Danny. I had to. For you.
Oh, Jace.
I shook my head. He was right. I was going to be late. And in Santiago City, you never wanted to be late while visiting the Suckheads. After the parapsychic act, many paranormal species got the vote, and a whole new code of laws was drawn up. Advances in medical tech meant cloned blood for the Nichtren, enzyme treatments to help control werecanism, protection against human hunters for the Swanhilds, and a whole system of classification for who and what qualified for citizens' rights. Most of the night world had come out to be registered as voters, some of them reluctantly. The Nichtren, of course, having shepherded the act through after decades of political maneuvering and hush money, came out first of all. In more ways than one, Nichtren masters were the prime paranormal powers in any city, keeping the peace and dispensing swift justice to any werecane, kobolding, or any other non-human that flew above the radar and made too much trouble. The Nichtren were courted by both Hegemony and Puchkin, and if you had to deal with the paranormal in any city, a good place to start was with the Suckheads. They had their long, pretty fingers in every pie. The House of Pain was an old haunt. Feeding place and social gathering spot at once, it had been a hub of the paranormal and parapsychic community ever since its inception. After the Awakening, it had closed to humans and started catering exclusively to other species. The Nichtren who ruled it, the prime power of the city, was rumored to be one mean son of a bitch. I wouldn't know. Humans, especially scions, weren't allowed in Nichtren haunts unless they're registered as legitimate indentured servants or thralls. Several paranormal species didn't precisely like scions, but we were marginally more acceptable than normals. Scions and magi had been trafficking with paranormals since before the Awakening, trading their own uncertain skills for protection, knowledge, and other things. The population growth of humanity had eaten away at the habitat of almost every paranormal species, and even the Nichtren had reason to fear mobs of normals with pitchforks, stakes, or guns. To the other species, humans were evil at worst, scions unnecessary evil at best. They have long memories, the paranormals, and they remember being squeezed out of their habitats by humanity or being hunted when they tried to adapt. Silence, blending in, and clannishness had kept them viable as a species. The habits held even though they hadn't had to hide for a long time. A scion could go her whole life without really interacting with a paranormal, even if she was a magi or an anemone. The few humans who studied paranormal physiology and culture were given hegemony grants and worked in the academic fields. And some anthropologists even studied paranormals, but those were few and far between. Despite the stories of scions being taken in by Swanhilds or taught by Nichtren, it just didn't happen that often. Paranormals were more likely to view humans as food or a disease. Given how we'd treated non-human species throughout most of our history, I don't blame them one bit. The alley off Heller Street was full of milling people, most with press badges. The Nichtren paparazzi were out big time. The gothed-out groupies clustered with them, trying to look exceptional and maybe buy a Nichtren's notice. A faint, listless sprinkle of rain splattered down. Full night had fallen, orange city glow staining the sky. I saw the thick pulsing of power on the brick wall at the end of the alley. An old neon sign pulsing the word pain in fancy script over the door. A red carpet unrolled from the door down the alley, and red velvet cords on heavy brass stands kept the crowd back. Two hulking shapes I was fairly sure were Werecane instead of gene-spliced bouncers, lumped on either side of the door.
Ma'am?
I came back to myself. I'll be out in a few hours. You'll be here?
I've been contracted the entire night. You're still sunup, Miss Valentine. Do you want to get out now?
All right. No time like the present. The white-jacketed driver offered me his hand and I took it. Careful to place no weight on it as I stepped out of the hover limo. I smelled night and human excitement, and a dash of something dry and powerful over the top. I wished again I could shut down my nose. Lace flashes. They were taking pictures. I blinked, settling the cloak on my shoulders, shaking the folds of material free. The papers were tucked in a pocket I'd thoughtfully sewn into the skirt. I set my chin, nodded to the driver, a short, pimple-faced young boy squeezed into a white and black uniform with gold braid, and set off down the red carpet. The limo lifted up to float in a slow pattern, joining the other hover limos and personal hovers, already threading through the parking level above the House of Pain.
Dante Valentine! Hey, it's Dante Valentine!
I didn't acknowledge them, and soon they were all trying to catch my attention. I strode down the carpet, head high, feeling the weight of my hair and the stilettos caught in the twist. I hate this. If Jaframel had been with me, he would have walked with his head up, his hands clasped behind his back, utterly unmoved by the human hubbub. Jace might have grinned, mugged for the cameras a bit, or caused some mischief. Gabe would have lit a cigarette, and Eddie would have snarled. The thought of Jado or Abracadabra dealing with this was ridiculous enough to be laughable. But me, I couldn't imitate any of them. I strode toward the lion's den with no time to waste. The things by the door were indeed Werecane, hulking bipeds covered with fur, halfway between human and hunt form. I'd taken the required classes in paranormal anatomy at Rigor Hall and beyond at the Academy, but it was odd to see them up close. In the old days, they might have worn clothing or stayed in human form. Now all they wore were ruffs of hair around their genitals. I didn't look. Instead, I held up the invitation and dropped the outer edge of my shields. Power blurred, stroking against the building's cold blue-black glow. A radioactive wellspring of power from Saint City's deep black heart bathed this place. It had been here for centuries, the crackling energy of paranormals gathered in one place, seeping into the concrete, brick, and stone. A heartbeat of music thudded out through the walls. The werecane said nothing. One of them jerked his chin, motioning me to open the door and go inside. I wanted to curl my right hand around my sword hilt. I also wished my left shoulder didn't buzz and burn as if red-hot iron was held just above my skin. Anger curled through my stomach, a welcome thread of familiar heat.
I'll be damned if I'll be treated like a second-class citizen to be hustled into this goddamn place, even if I am human.
I measured both werecane with a slow, steady gaze.
I can take them. I can take them both. I can gut them. I've got a sword again.
Then I remembered I wasn't just human anymore. But I still didn't back down, holding eye contact and playing the dominance game. It would be a bad start to act weak here at the door. Finally, one of them gave me a jerky half-bow.
Come in, lady. Welcome to the House of Pain.
I gave them a nod and swept past, my head held high.
Who am I? I never would have done that before.
Inside, a migraine attack of red and blue lights throbbed. The music was nothing I recognized. There was a time when I would have known, back when I used to go dancing with Jace, his spiky aura closing me off in the backwash of crowd feeling. Inside the house, there was no tang of humans or human desperation, no sweet knife blade of human desire or straining sex in dark corners. There were no ghost flits riding the edges of the crowd's heat. No blur of alcohol, no swirls of synth-hash cigarette smoke either. Instead, power rode the air in swirls and eddies, a lazy bath of energy that made me shiver slightly, my lips parting, my entire body stroked and teased in 100 ways. If I'd known...
No wonder they don't let humans in here. A scion could get addicted to this. They could have a whole community of feeders in here. The overcharge of carnivorous power in here would addict a human scion faster than chill would hook a junkie. And they would keep coming back for more, or looking for the same charge out on the streets, draining anyone they could to feel the crackling feedback of power. I'm lucky to be safe behind a demon's shielding, closed off from the dozing, razor-toothed buzzing that could swallow me whole. Good thing I left Jace at home, too.
The place was warehouse-sized and full of bright glittering eyes and long hair, beautiful pale faces, and the massive shapes of werecane. I saw a gaggle of swanhilds in one corner, their feathered ruffs standing erect around their heads, and a group of something I recognized as kobolding in another, downing tankards of beer. Each time one of the squat, gray-skinned things took down another pitcher, the others would cheer. Long, floating sheets of material hung from the ceiling. I glanced up, wished I hadn't, and glanced back down.
Cages on the ceiling. I can't afford to gray out from shock now. If Jeff or Mel was here...
The image of a lean, saturnine face and piercing green eyes rose in front of me. I shoved it down.
Stop thinking about that!
I set off across the cement floor. A few steps in, slick stone reverberated under my feet.
It paved the whole place in marble.
The sound bounced and echoed. I shook my head slightly, wishing once again I could shut my ears off or turn the volume dial down just a little. The area that vibrated most intensely with power was a booth done in red velvet, facing the bar. I skirted the dance floor, trying not to notice the infrequent pattering drops from the cages overhead, or the bright, inhuman eyes peering at me. The Nichtbrenn didn't act as if they noticed my presence, but I sensed a few of them trailing me. They dressed in silks and velvets, some of them in ultra-hip modern pleather and spiked hair,
Gel glitter sparkling on pale cheeks. One of them, a tall man in bottle green velvet with fountaining lace at the cuffs, smiled widely at me, showing his fangs. My right hand curled into a fist. I considered stopping, reaching for my sword, but my legs had already carried me toward the booth, as if set on automatic.
This is dangerous. I can't afford to lose focus now.
I blinked slowly, the pain in my shoulder spiking, then easing a little.
I could tap into the power here and blow the whole goddamn place down if I wanted to, without even the slightest hesitation or hint of backlash. Now is not the time to be glad that Jaframel altered me, but I still feel glad. A little. In a weird, heart-thumping kind of way. Playing with the big boys now. Danny Valentine is in a whole different league.
I stopped in front of the booth. Two men that looked almost human, both with a glaze of power and the musty, deliciously wicked smell of Nichtren on them, stood on either side. One of them eyed my sword hilt and opened his mouth to say something. I fixed him with a hot glare.
Let her in.
Nikolai, the prime power of Saint City, leaned back on the red velvet of an antique couch carved to within an inch of its life. An equally antique table rested in front of him, pocked with gaps I recognized as bullet holes. He was tall, broad-shouldered, and dressed in nondescript dark clothing that looked silky. No amount of simplicity could disguise the weltering onslaught of power he commanded. I would have been impressed if I hadn't dealt with power all my life. As it was, I cocked a hip for balance and leverage in case anyone came at me, looked into his cat-sheened dark eyes, and held up the invitation. He had a shelf of dark hair falling over his eyes, a wide, generous mouth, and high-sculpted cheekbones. He would have been handsome without the flat shine of his eyes, like a cat's eyes at night when the light hits them just right, and the utter, inhuman stillness he settled into. He wore a dark button-down shirt, probably silk, and a pair of loose silken pants, a pair of very good Petrollo boots, and no jewelry. Beside him, leaning forward with her elbows on her knees, sat a Nichtren female with a fall of long, curling, blonde-streaked hair, her dark blue eyes liquid and fixed on me. She had no catshine to her eyes, and none of Nikolai's immobility. Instead, her fingernails tapped at the air, her lush lips parted slightly, the tips of her fangs showing. She wore a frayed red V-neck sweater and a pair of dark ratty jeans, beaten and scarred combat boots, and a thick silver cuff bracelet with a tiger's eye the size of a mini credit disc on her right wrist. She measured me from head to foot, and then smiled, half of her mouth pulling up.
I'm glad someone's having fun.
I stepped forward into the booth, through a sticky sheet of power that snapped shut behind me. Instantly, the noise they called music went down in volume. Nikolai said nothing, examining me. It was like being eyed by a wild animal that hadn't quite made up its mind to eat you or simply crush you with a clawed paw. I nodded at the female, knowing that his consort was the way into his good graces. Rumor had it she was the only thing in the entire city that Nikolai valued. Rumor also had it that he went crazy if he even thought someone had messed with her. Now ain't that sweet.
I'm Danny Valentine, and I'm grateful you agreed to see me, ma'am, sir.
Anyone who knew me would have expected the words to sound sarcastic. I was faintly surprised they didn't. Nikolai still didn't move. The Nichtren female laughed. It surprised me and made my hackles rise. Her eyes flared a dark, luminous blue. She was exquisite. And I caught a thread of an odd scent. Some type of musk that reminded me of Sex Witch over the musty, caramelized, dark chocolate scent of Nichtren.
Hi, sit down. Nick's just in a mood. We have to see a Werecane delegation after you, and he finds that unpleasant. Want something to drink?
I sensed she was old, too, but not nearly as old as him.
I wouldn't trust the liquor in here, lady.
I shook my head, let my cloak fall to the floor. It was a good gesture. It showed I had nothing but the ordinary weapons. I settled myself on the couch to their left, easing down gingerly.
I wish I could hold my sword across my lap. Steel would be better than empty air between me and these two.
Nikolai finally moved.
What is it you require?
The woman's pale, expressive hand came down on his knee. The tiger's eye on her bracelet flashed with light. He had been immobile before. Now he looked over at her, and a stone would have looked frenetic next to him.
Be polite, sweetie. She's new at this.
The woman rolled her eyes, then rested her elbows on her knees again.
What can we do for you, Miss Valentine?
Now that's unexpected.
I drew the papers out of my pocket, making sure to move very slowly. All the same, Nikolai's eyelids dropped a fraction. A chill, prickling weight of power covered him.
I don't think I ever want to see him pissed off.
The thought was there and gone in a flash. I pushed the sudden swell of almost fear down. I had nothing to worry about. I was here on business, and I wasn't just human.
Am I? What's the protocol for an almost demon dealing with a master Nichtwren? This wasn't ever covered at the academy. Maybe I should write to the Hegemony Educational Board.
I laid the papers on the table, swallowing the choking, panicked giggle rising in my chest.
The police have asked me to look into this. Have you ever seen anything like it? I know you'll have access to texts I don't. If you can narrow this down, it would help me immensely.
She scooped the papers up. Nikolai didn't move, but he seemed to give the impression of a twitch. She settled back, moving with preternatural Nichtwren grace, and cuddled into his side. That managed to make him move. He slid his arm over her shoulders and looked down at the top of her head. My heart slammed into my throat. For some reason, he reminded me of Eddie watching Gabe, his face softening slightly, his eyes lighting up. It was a startlingly human expression on a being who hadn't been human for a long, long time. No man had ever looked at me like that.
Would you have noticed if they did?
I'm not even gonna dignify that thought with a response. Sekhmet Sias, I'm even ignoring my own bloody self. I'm losing my mind.
Velvet rustled as I shifted uneasily.
I wish I could have worn jeans to this. At least if I'd worn jeans, I could have ridden a slick board.
I licked dry lips and watched as she scanned the pictures, her mouth tightening. She shuddered, her blue eyes lighting with a flare of something almost panicked, gone in an instant. Nikolai's eyes flicked over me.
Nick, take a look at this.
She held up the papers. He stirred himself to glance, a faint line grooving between his eyebrows, taking the lace prints from her slim, pretty hand. She moved slightly, her body shifting closer to his.
It's ceremonial, but I haven't seen this variation, have you?
It stinks of evil, Celine.
His eyes lost their cat shine for a moment and turned dark. For a moment, there was a flash of how he might have looked as a human man, and I found myself staring, hoping to catch it again.
Have you seen it?
Her hand flashed out to catch the other side of the sheaf of paper. There was a long, breathless pause. His eyes searched her face, still dark and horribly, awfully human.
No, Milaya, I have not seen this exact variation. And yet...
His gaze moving slow and gelid past me and out over the dance floor.
He looks just like a lion looking over a herd of zebras. Or a pimp checking out a flock of unregistered hookers.
You're killing me here, Nikolai.
She pushed a dark blonde curl out of her face. Her lips quirked downward before she smiled. Bits of light from the blast ball suspended over the dance floor flicked over the smooth planes of her face.
Can we just once have some information without it being a huge production?
Hear, hear, I second that. I thought it was going to be a relief to be in a place without human stink. Instead, it creeps me out.
My hackles rose, almost goosebumps roughening my skin. They clustered through the whole building, the Nichtwren. Alien as demons, even if originally human. The only way to become a Nichtwren is to be infected, bitten and transformed with a blood exchange. It usually takes two or three exchanges for the turn to happen. Bones change. The jaw becomes distended and cartilaginous.
The eyes transform, able to see in complete darkness, and the thirst races through their veins. It's a combination of retroviral infection and some etheric transfer from master to fledgling that modern science, for all its biomechanical wonder, can't replicate. They were different from normal humans and different from me, yet I still felt something odd, a type of kinship. Most of the Nichtren here had been turned into something else, altered away from human and into something different, something more.
Like me? I wonder if people feel like this when they look at me.
I shifted slightly on the uncomfortably hard couch. The air inside the sticky shield turned chill, pressing against heart and throat and eye. If I'd still been human, this would have made me draw my sword. A feral, bloodthirsty current swirling through the air. I would have looked for a safe wall to put my back to. It felt like someone was going to get hurt.
It looks like feeder glyphs.
One of Nikolai's hands crept up, touched her cheek. The gesture was so tender. Blood rose hot in my cheeks. I felt like a voyeur. His eyes took back the gold-green sheen of a cat's, flicked between the photos and then her face.
Why have I heard nothing of this?
It started with a normal, and then a sex witch. One of Polyamor's girls. Then it was a necromance. Christabel Moorcock. I quelled the shiver rising up my spine.
They're feeder glyphs.
Feeder glyphs were illegal except for research purposes. Twisting the nine cannons to serve a feeder was heavy-duty magic, lethal to some. It was hard to protect against spells using runes that could bolster a feeder's talents.
They appear to be.
Nikolai's eyes still locked on Celine's face. She moved slightly, her mouth softening, and I dropped my gaze to the bullet-scarred table.
You'd think Nichtren would have proper furniture.
I inhaled deeply to calm myself. My left shoulder eased slightly, not so much of the crunching, living glare of pain. The music outside melded into retro-funk, their Celadon groove. A chill finger traced my spine. The last time I'd heard this music had been in Dakin Whitaker's old nightclub before I'd turned him in for running chill. When I'd blown back into town after Rio, I'd found out Dake was dead of chill detox, eaten alive by the drug. It wasn't a pleasant thought, just like everything else I'd been thinking lately.
This thing killed a Tantra Icon?
I had to think before I remembered that was one of the old, very old, words for a sex witch. Sex witches used to be rare. Their ability to heal and need to live off the etheric and psychic energy raised by sex, combining to make them prized, paranormal pets before the awakening. It also contributed to a lot of them getting killed off young in some very nasty ways before they had hegemony protection. I nodded, the stilettos a reassuring, sharp weight in my hair.
Then you shall have assistance in hunting down the perpetrator.
Nikolai shuffled the papers back together with one brisk movement.
You are welcome here, Miss Valentine. When you have dispatched this criminal, come back. It seems my Celine fancies you.
The female rolled her eyes again, a reassuringly human movement.
That's his way of saying you can step in without an invitation.
She plucked the papers from his hand and leaned forward to offer them to me. My fingers were numb. I forced my right hand to close around the lace prints and tuck them back in my pocket.
Thank you, ma'am.
It's Celine.
Her eyes flicked out over the dance floor. It was a glance very much like his. Maybe an unconscious imitation, but it still made my skin crawl.
There's the delegation. I think that's all we can tell you. Nikolai's got this thing about anyone messing with the Tantraiken.
Why? Why'd you ask that? Curiosity killed the cat, Danny. Just get out of here. Get out of here now.
She shrugged. It was a beautiful, loose, fluid movement.
Maybe because I used to be one. Stay and have a drink if you like. The bar's got stuff for just about everyone. Come back sometime.
I might. I made it to my feet, my shoulder throbbing.
Thank you.
Nikolai lifted his hand.
One moment, Demonling.
I froze.
He recognizes me as a demon? Of course, he's Nichtren. He can see power.
If he came over the table at me, I could carve his heart out. But she was something else. The hard glitter in her dark blue eyes and the nervous way she twitched was almost scarier than his rock-like stillness. And the power that cloaked them both was impressive, even if it was nothing like a demon's. Then again, nothing in the wide world was like a demon when it came to power, except for a god. And I had no desire to meet any god other than my own, thank you very much. I could even go the rest of my life without having to deal with a demon ever again, too.
Now, if I can just convince the Prince of Hell to forget I exist.
I have a library.
Nikolai's flat cat eyes looked straight through me. I wasn't sanguine about going back out into the sonic assault.
Or about having them at my back. Or about staying in this goddamn place any longer than I absolutely have to.
I didn't look up at the cages on the ceiling, but the effort cost me dearly. My stomach fluttered uneasily, and I had never in my life wished to vomit more than I did at that moment.
Among my acquisitions are several texts supposedly written by demons. You may find them useful.
Yeah? Where were you in the last year or so when I had time to come and bury my nose in a few books?
Thank you. It was all I could say. I scooped up my cloak and swirled it around my shoulders, turned on my heel, and plunged through the sticky shield. The music slammed into my whole body like a backdraft from a reactive fire.
Oh, get me the hell out of here. I have to get out of here. Dear gods, get me out of here.
There was only a millisecond's worth of warning before the lights died. The music failed as well. That was a relief. Instinct sent me into a fighting crouch, and my hand blurred up toward my sword hilt. Sudden dark settled into the walls and floor. I saw the lamplit pricks of Nichtren eyes firing through the gloom. My sword flew free of the sheath. My heart gave one incredible leaping thud, my skin coming alive.
God's damn the skirt of this dress.
The demon equivalent of adrenaline flooded my system.
Whatever's coming, if anything gets near me, I am going to kill it.
Oh yes, this was what I lived for. A thundercrack of power slammed out from behind me, bearing the unmistakable cold acid tang of Nichtren.
I am not amused.
Nikolai, well, that should break the stasis.
I came up out of my crouch in a fast, light shuffle, blade whirling, the familiar feeling of racing on the thin edge of adrenaline rising from that old place of instinct and terror. The cloak fell for the second time. It would only tangle me up. I half-turned, steel coming up, cleaving heavy air. My blade carved cleanly through whatever it was. I whirled on the balls of my feet, avoiding blood spray, took the second one with a clash. It was a low, hulking shape. My pupils dilated, demon eyes taking in every available photon and squeezing the usefulness out of it. There wasn't much light here, even for me. My left hand mongoosh, reversed along my forearm to act as a shield, took a hell of a strike. I was more surprised than hurt.
Fuck, that damn thing is fast!
The emergency lights came up, a wash of crimson stinging my eyes, but I was moving on instinct anyway. I punched something hairy in the face with my fist braced with the knife hilt, then leapt. I landed between two hulking shapes. A quick kick behind one's knee, the hairy shape folding down, spinning to engage the other. The smell of blood and wet fur exploded out, gaggingly strong. My shoulder burned even more fiercely. Claws raked up my side, and the whole world seemed to go white for a moment, a sheet of fire blinding me. Black demon blood splattered on the marble, my blood, redolent of spice and sweet rotting fruit.
How did I get into this? I'm fighting off a couple of fucking werecane.
Bad luck. I was just in the way.
God damn it!
The cane hit me like a freight train, fur and stink and claws. I smashed up with my left, then again. I was too close to engage with the sword.
Get a little distance, Danny. Move, move, move!
I took the easy way out,
dropping and rolling to scythe the cane's legs out from underneath it. The cane spun aside, twisting in midair with unholy fluidity, and the scar on my left shoulder blazed into agonized life. My body gathered itself, new strength suddenly coursing through my veins, and I kicked up with both legs. My back curving as momentum jolted me up off the floor and onto my feet. My right foot lashed out, catching the cane I'd just tripped on the nose. A flurry in the corner of my eye was another one bearing down on me. Steel flashed and Fudoshin described a sweet, clean arc, and more blood exploded. The cane leaping for me dropped, its intestines slithering wetly out. I landed, spinning to feint with the mangush, and then cut. Followed with a one-handed side-down sweep that missed because the cane was shuffling back. It was my turn to attack, my wrist turning so the blade fell into position again, every motion as natural as breathing. I bolted forward, rammed the mangush home between two ribs, then leaned, sword coming in from the side because the side-down sweep turned naturally into the rib-splitting cut. Fudoshin bit deep. Deep enough, I hoped, to cut the abdominal aorta. I twisted the blade against the suction of preternatural muscle, smelled the stink of a battlefield and of wear cane blurring together, and the cane in front of me slumped away from my sword. I backed up, blood hissing free of shining blade as I whipped it through the cleaning stroke. Faint blue fire etched itself along the razor edge. The process of making the sword mine had begun with the first blood shed together. I half spun, ready to take on the next enemy, but the fight was over. Dead werecane lay scattered about, the last one flopping until Nikolai casually reached down, Nichtren claws extended, and tore its throat out. There were more bodies piled over the red velvet couch he and Celine had just been perched on, and still more bodies further away toward the dance floor. For every one I'd killed, Nikolai had killed three.
Most distressing.
Well, you left nothing for me.
My apologies, Milaya. Soren will have much to answer for.
His eyes came up, dark holes in his face under the shell of crimson lighting.
You fight well, Demonling, and you attacked my enemies.
But that most emphatically does not make me your friend.
I clamped my teeth so the words couldn't escape. The last thing I needed right now was more trouble. If I hadn't been in the way, they would have ignored me, and I would have been happy to just get the hell out of here.
Thanks for the compliment.
I bent down to wrench my knife free of a werecane's ribs.
Why did they,
I trailed off, not really wanting the explanation anyway.
The werecane are embroiled in a territorial dispute.
He was immaculate. His face was a thoughtful Renaissance stone angel's, set in its perfection and unremarkable as a statue compared to the welter of power surrounding him. Celine stood behind him, dyed and dipped in crimson, her hands on her hips. She didn't look happy.
This is the faction unhappy with the decision I was required to arbitrate. I am sorry for the disturbance. I do not like a guest of mine being forced to fight. It reflects badly on me. Accept my apology.
It's hell being top of the heap, isn't it?
That one almost made it out of my mouth. There was a time when I would have let it.
Oh, no worries. Have a nice night.
It is extremely unlikely.
He half turned to look over his shoulder at Celine, his gaze falling in one swift sweep down her body, as if checking her for damage.
But you have my thanks, Demonling. Good luck.
I couldn't help myself this time.
I'm beginning to think I'll need it.
I got out of there while I still could. I had the hover limo for the rest of the night. There was no reason not to use it. So I gave the driver Christabel Moorcock's address. I should have started with the puzzling Bryce Smith, or with the sex witch Yazrul. I should have gone to salvage whatever traces remained. Yet I went to Christabel's. I tried to tell myself I was violating procedure because of instinct, and that the other two scenes were too old. The hover limo spiraled down to land on the roof of her brownstone apartment building at the edge of the tank district.
The driver scurried around to open my door before I could reach for the handle. His eyes were wide and dark. The hover limo rose afterward to circle in the parking patterns overhead. This close to the tank district, the smell of garbage and synth hash swirled through the air, mixing with sharp spikes of illicit sex from the hookers prowling the strips and the deep wells of the nightclubs, glittering like novas in the psychic ether. Cool wind touched my hair as I stood for a moment on the concrete landing pad, feeling the atmosphere of the tank press against me. If Saint City was a cold, radioactive animal wanting to be stroked, the tank was the pulsing heart of that animal, so fiercely cold it burned. The throbbing that forced vital energy through the rest of the city, through the sluggish brain of the financial district and the arteries of the pavement. The rat hole was buried in the depths of the tank, a deep pit of vital energy whistling a subsonic note at the very bottom of my sensing range.
My city. It does indeed feel like home.
My dat band got me in through the building's public access net. Christabel's mage-sealed apartment was on the top floor. Since Gabe had keyed me into the Saint City police net with access to the scenes, the mage ceiling parted for me. Inside, the air was stale, tinted with the chemical wash of carbonyl, used to get blood out of fibers. The cleaners had come in to get rid of the blood and matter once the forensic techs had gone through the place. I caught a lingering trace of jasmine perfume and the tingle of a powerful awareness. A reader had been here to capture every aspect of the scene.
I'll bet it was Beulah McKinley.
She did good work, and whatever scene she had processed always held a breath of jasmine.
I wonder if she, like Candy Mandy, caught sight of whatever drove Christabel's ghost mad.
The front door had been shattered, splinters peppering the wall opposite and the carpeted hall. Christabel's shields were slowly fading, the giant rents torn in them, patched with Gabe's trademark deftness. A shunt line made its way into the street outside to carefully and safely drain away the ambient energy and fold Christabel's shields up, so no trace of murder and agony remained to create psychic sludge for other inhabitants of this quiet building. I entered, and the temporary mage-sealed door shut behind me. I was inside Christabel Moorcock's house.